Blog Talk Radio.
The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts Boyd and Lucinda for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is March 17th, 2010, and we'd like to wish everyone a happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd, and our topic is, as always, The Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. Tonight we have an awesome show for you. We have Mr. Gumbercindo Vidot Jr. He's an author, and he was born in Puerto Rico, grew up in Spanish Harlem in the South Bronx in New York, and he got involved with gangs at an early age, but learned to take his street fighting to the boxing ring, and he overcame that kind of life. And we will talk with him tonight and hear his story. I'd like to introduce to you now my co-host, Boyd.
Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the show as always. And we just here to thank our guests for coming to the show. And we're finna bring it to you live like we always do. And I just want to say thanks to my wife for always doing a great job with the show and other things. So just want to always get a wife for your big up. So we're going to turn the mic over to the gentleman right now and let him formally introduce himself to the people, and we're going to get it started.
Hi, everybody. My name is Gumbercindo Vidot, and I'm glad to be here. I really appreciate the invite, and I'm hoping to share my story that can hopefully help others.
Great. Well, let's just start at the beginning, I guess. You were born in Puerto Rico, and your parents moved to the big city of Spanish Harlem.
Yeah.
Looking for the American dream, and they didn't find it very, very well, I guess, according to you. Why don't you just let us, tell us your story?
Well, my parents, like most Puerto Ricans, migrated in the early 50s. Most Puerto Ricans migrated to the United States in the hopes of that American dream. There was a program going on in Puerto Rico, which was called Operation Bootstrap. And this was sort of like the governor and the United States saying that we can lift you from your bootstraps and bring you to success by coming to America, and that was the dream. And when they did come to America, they didn't find that dream, but instead of a lot of factory work and racism and things of that nature. But they always searched for the American dream, and we landed up in Harlem, and that's where most Puerto Ricans normally landed up when at that time, and then the Bronx, South Bronx, and then later to other states, but it was like a tunnel from Puerto Rico to Harlem, direct mm-hmm. tunnel. You leave Puerto Rico, and that's where everybody you want to see a Puerto Rican, go to Harlem. That's where it was. And of course, we lived we were poor. Both my parents worked for 25 years in factories and had nothing to show for it whatsoever. And in Harlem, it's Harlem, Spanish Harlem. They named that later because there were people that spoke Spanish there. But we grew amongst African Americans there, and that's where blacks and Puerto Ricans in New York were just living in the same conditions in the ghetto. So we picked up the same thing they picked up. We learned from them. They learned from us. And we were all in one big melting pot. Yeah, and that's right. What it's about. I started to, at the early age of seven, I used to live in 103rd Street, and I always had this thing of having money in my pocket. I always wanted money in my pocket because I never had it. I guess that's probably why I wanted. So I started my little business. It was a shoe shine business. And my dad made a shoeshine box for me with his bare hands. I mean, he was great with his hands. So he made a shoeshine box for me, and I used to go to the corner of 103rd Street and shine shoes. People would come by. It was 25 cents a shoeshine. I shined their shoes. I buffed them. I spit shine them. And I was pretty well known. I had regular customers, you know, everybody that looked out for the little kid. And one day I had one kid come up to me and tells me that I had made about $7 that day. And he tells me, listen, someone is going to rob your money. If you don't give it to me, the other guy is going to take it. So it didn't sound right, but I was small, I was scared, and I wasn't used to this kind of stuff. So unwillingly, I gave him my $7 after he forced me into the building. He pulled out a knife at me and took my money. And, I mean, I was hurt. I mean, this is the first time I've seen a knife in my face, and first time I ever seen any type of someone taking something from someone like that, you know. And I left the building crying and with my shoeshine box. And I walked home all the way and crying and didn't tell my parents anything about it. You know, I kept that to myself. But I was always scared. But I didn't stop. I kept going back to the corner shining shoes. There used to be a gang there. They were called the Dragons. And some of you may know Joe Patan. Joe Patan, the singer. Was the leader of the Dragons, who later came up with the record album Sasso and Sasso Music, and we joined the Junior Dragons because we were too young to join the regular Dragons, right? So we joined the Junior Dragons. So what happened was these guys went up to me, and they befriended me. They said, "Listen, if you ever have a problem, let us know. We take care of it." Well, I said, "Well, listen, I did have a problem. I had some kid who robbed me," and I told them about it, and they said, "Well, you know, next time you see this kid, you let us know." And I did. And the first time in my life that I saw a real beating was that day. I mean, when I pointed out the kid started to run, and then they ran after him. They caught him. They kicked this kid. They punched him. They did everything. They threw him out of the subway steps. I mean, this guy, I mean, I felt sorry for the guy. And then I knew then that the only way I was going to get any type of protection in that hood was to be a member of that gang. So when they asked me, I said, "Hey, why not?" So I had to fight in order to be in that gang. So I fought the warlord, he was 12 years old, and I was 7 years old, and I beat him. And I became the youngest warlord of the Junior Dragons. And at 7 years old. And later we started making sip guns, and I became very good at it, at making sip guns. I mean, we grabbed car antennas and snatch it right out. Get a file it down in the center, put a .22 shell in there, get some rubber from a tire, wrap that around with some black tape. I had me a gun. I used to make a zip gun in 10 minutes.
The book says they call you the best zip gun maker.
I was the best zip gun maker in the hood. I was the best. Whenever there was a rumble, I mean, they said, "Hey, man, we need some guns." And they used to call on me, and I used to make it. But the thing about zip guns at that time, like, that was the most inaccurate thing. These things, you don't know where that bullet's going to go, you know. So that was dangerous.
Hey, I just want to interrupt you for a minute. That's the first time in years that I've heard somebody mention zip gun, right? I had several zip guns in the hood when we used to make them, like you said, pulling the antenna off the car, and then, you know, you get the latch from a store or something, and you put the spring on the back and you let the latch go. It's only a one-shot thing, you know?
That's right.
I have never heard that in all my years until tonight, man. So, yeah, that let me know that you was really out there. You feel me? Because a gat has done really been out there.
I see you all the way, brother.
Yeah, a gat done really been out there know about the zip gun. If you don't know about this making the zip gun, you ain't been in no game.
That's right.
That's real talk. So, yeah. You know,
well, you
brought back big memories, man.
Your stories are both, you know, pretty similar because, you know, Rob was.
I've noticed that. I've read some of his book, and I've noticed that. And
the
blocks that I've seen.
Yeah, Rob. Mm-hmm.
Hey, how you doing?
I mean, the good things about zip guns is that you could have just stick them in your pocket.
Yeah,
Or stick it right up your sleeve there. And then whatever you needed, you just put your wrist down, and that zip gun was right in your hand.
Hey, man, don't you know we used to go to my boy's daddy's shop? He had a shop, and we had made, like, the 22 rifle, you know, the wood looking just like a real gun, you know what I mean? And then you had to have the nails, the over nails, you know what I mean, to nail it down, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, man, them were the days right there, man. You know, if you couldn't get no gun from somewhere, you can always make your one
shot. All you needed was the car because it was the perfect size.
That's
the car antenna was the perfect size for a 22 shell.
And get you a latch and get you some nails and a hammer and put that latch on there with the spring and make sure your spring is real, real strong. You know what I mean? Yeah,
right.
My man.
But you only had one shot, brother.
That's it.
You only had one shot. After you
Boy,
shoot
you
that
brought
nail,
back
little...
memories, man. You went way back, B.
Yeah. we used to fight a gang called the Magistrators. And I really didn't really want to get into that gang bit. But what had to happen was at seven years old, I was shining shoes one time on 103rd Street. And I said, you know what, it's getting slow here. So I said, you know what, let me move up downtown a little bit. You know, so I moved downtown, you know, white folk were up there. And so, you know, I figured they have a little more money. But they had money, but they didn't shine their shoes, you know.
Right.
They had dirty shoes. So I'm sitting in front of a cigar store there one time, and I was there for a couple of days, and the cigar store owner comes out, and he tells me, after a couple of days, he says, get out of here. I don't want you here no more. You know, he had a bad day. I don't know. So I said, well, I'm not bothering anybody. What do you want from me? He says, well, I don't want you over here. You know, get out of here. So I said, you know what, I'm not doing nothing wrong. So I stood there. He comes back out. Frustrated, takes my shoebox and smashes it across the. I mean, he just throws it up in the air and throws it to the ground and starts calling me spick, get the hell out of here, go back to your neighborhood, and all kinds of stuff like that. And that was my first taste of racism. And I couldn't understand it for a long time. I just couldn't understand why this white guy hated me so much. You know, I did nothing. I was a 7-year-old kid trying to make some money.
Right.
But you know, I obliged because I was in their neighborhood and there was a bunch of them. And then I got chased by some of them, so I just ran and left it. But I was frustrated. I was pissed off and for a long time. I didn't tell my parents about it neither. I didn't tell my parents about that because my father never got into any trouble. But he would have, you know, if I were to tell him that somebody did that. But I live with it. So when I was invited to gangbang against the Magistrators, which was the white gang on the 99th Street, 98th Street, in that area, I was very willing to do it because I felt like I was getting back at this guy because of that. So that was my first taste of racism and hate.
Right.
There. And then I got my first taste of being a victim of robbery already when I was robbed. So I was pretty much already
frustrated.
Into the hood. I was already grabbed in the hood. From there on, it was all downhill for me.
Right, frustrated, mad, disappointed, the whole nine yards. You know.
Yeah.
So as you kept getting deeper into the gang life, how did you break off from the gang life to wanting to sell drugs and different things? How did all that eventually come about as you kept growing?
Well, it started with alcohol a lot. I mean, at 7 years old, we were drinking wine. Gypsy Rose was the favorite brand at that time. I don't know if you recall that. But it was like 25 cents a bottle. It was the cheapest, the worst tasting wine in the world. I mean, I remember when I used to drink that. The following day, I used to see the bottle. I used to throw up just looking at it. I mean, it was
like
just
the Wildlife was
thing.
Rose.
Oh, another one. Yeah, Thunderbird. You know, I mean, the worst things in the world.
Right.
And we couldn't afford it, so we used to ask the bums in the streets or some older guys to buy it from us. And they used to go to the liquor store, buy it for us. We give them a bottle, and they gave us our bottle. We used to go up to the projects and just get shit faced.
Right. That's a lot of
some
of my homeboys used to do that.
Yeah, just sit up there and bring the girls. Next thing you know, I was introduced to a pot. And at 7 years old, by nine, I wasn't a virgin anymore. You know, so, I mean, my life went fast.
Right.
I grew up fast, very, very fast. You know, what 15, 16 years did not do. I was doing that 8, 9 years old. And,
right.
You know, and it was all downhill. It was all downhill
right.
from there.
Yeah, that sounds definitely
my parents
like my life, yeah.
Yeah. And my parents thought that it was Harlem was not a place to raise kids.
Right.
But then again, where's a poor family going to go? So yeah. They go to the South Bronx.
Right, and it's
so
all right
there.
So
the oven, you know?
Right, it's all right there in your face, you know?
All right there, brother. So it led from Harlem to South Bronx. It was the same thing. The only thing that, the streets were named differently, but, you know, the gangs were still there.
Right.
Joined that again, and the drugs were there, the alcohol continued.
Right.
And then I was later introduced to heroin.
Right.
When I was 13 years old, I started mainlining. But by that time, I was so frustrated.
Right.
And I really wanted to get out of this feeling that I had of hopelessness and anger that I had.
Right.
And like, a lot of guys used to start shooting up by a skin popping. And skin popping is when, you know, you just take the needle and just hit yourself on the arm like they do in the hospital, like a tetanus shot. But I didn't. I started right in my main line. I shot it right up my vein the first time with a $2 bag. And I loved it.
What made you, like you said, you know, you was trying to escape a lot of things that had already started happening when you were 7, you know? And as you got involved with that life, with the heroin use and trade, I mean, what continuously made you to continue wanting to keep going down that road, especially when you knew, and I'm quite sure you learned, that this right here is going to be a dead end, you know, eventually. But what gravitated you to want to slow that down?
What, to slow it down or to get worse into it?
Get worse into it and slow it down.
Okay. Well, I think it was the feeling of hopelessness. You used to watch TV. I mean, I learned quick. I was a very smart kid, and I remember watching the My Three Sons and Donna Reed shows and stuff like that. And you always see white folk, you know, and you never seen a Puerto Rican or anyone of color there. You know, it was those white folks. So it made you feel like life was made for them, not for you. You know, and I felt out of place. I felt out of place. I didn't feel I was part of society. You know, I mean, I was targeted at 7 years old. I remember my parents used to take us to the shops and a grocery shop, store, whatever it was. My mom used to come to us and used to tell us, "Listen, you better behave like white boys." I didn't understand that, and I said, "What does she mean by that?" And what it meant was that she wanted us to behave good, but we weren't behaving good. Because the thing about it was, when white kids do something bad, they were spoiled kids, but when we did it, we were spicks. So she tried to instill in us that we have to look better than them. We have to compose ourselves so they won't call us that. So I started seeing all this kind of stuff, and at a young age, and I said, you know, I don't like this. I don't like this pretending. You know, this is me. This is who I am. So I was pretty much of a rebel and angry.
Right.
And I think that anger stood with me. And so when I shot heroin, I shot with anger. You know, I shot it with anger and loved it. And it was a relief. Then after that, I didn't care about anything. I didn't care about race. I didn't care about anything.
Right.
You know, and so it progressed in there. But when I started seeing my friends just dying off and whatnot, you know, I started seeing change with me from the beginning. I mean, from the beginning, I saw the nice kid on the block suddenly, you know, being feared or people not talking to me anymore or not trusting me, you know. And, you know, you knew that you were doing something wrong, but you kept doing it because what else would you do to make yourself feel good? You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, there was just nothing else, you know. There was just nothing else.
So at that time, your homeboys was shooting up with you then?
Oh, yeah. They actually were shooting up before I was.
Mm-hmm.
They were shooting up before I was, and they were actually older, too. And they were shooting up much before I was. And I seen a couple of them, Pee Wee, you know.
Right.
Well, Pee Wee's brother who was killed because of a bad deal with drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Avabo was his name. He was he caught an OD. He died. Mm-hmm. I mean, many of them caught ID OD.
Right.
I OD'd probably 2-3 times in my career of heroin, and I came back. Because
right.
we all knew what to do, and that was something that we always talked about. If you OD, this is what you got to do. This is what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you never know how powerful that thing is, And,
right.
and sometimes you just want it so bad. And at that time, to be honest with you, that heroin was much, much stronger.
Right.
I mean,
the $2 bag
would have got you pretty good for a long time. Especially my friend, I was 5 feet tall. 90 pounds, So $2 bags was more than enough for me, So,
right.
But I enjoyed it because it made me feel different.
Right.
Not accepted in society like I wanted. Not, it wasn't going to get me the good job. It wasn't going to stop the racism, but it made me forget about all of it.
So what made you really want to straighten up your life? After you done OD'd a few times, you're still out there in the game doing wrong. What hit your life to the point that you really wanted to make true change?
Probably was a factor of a couple of factors. One, what my parents used to always tell me, that it was wrong. It was wrong, and I used to see them suffer and for me. And I see my dad and my mom cry for me. My brothers and my sisters mistrusting me. Because I was going to steal from them, and I did it.
Right.
I stole from them, from my habit, and I was not trusted. And then seeing my friends, my good friends, dying off, and that friendship that I've always cherished. I always cherish friendship. I was always a loyal friend, so I love friends. So when I started seeing friends dying or being killed for it, it starts to get to you. So. I mean, I suffered a long time before I decided to finally say, enough is enough.
Right.
But one day, I just said, I prayed. I really prayed. I prayed and I asked God to relieve me of this obsession.
Right.
Of heroin. And it took time, but I slowly said, I got to do it. And I didn't go to no program. I didn't go to no detox. And
right.
That's the amazing thing about it, because God knows I'm high maintenance. I'm the
right.
type of guy that can't go into a detox and follow instructions.
Right.
So God had to work on me personally.
Right.
So it was cold turkey all the way, the sweat, the chills, the whole nine yards.
Right. Because a person
at that time, I was
don't
about
know about
17.
Heroin.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I say it because a person that don't know about heroin, back in them days, and still right to this day, heroin is the most notorious drug in the game. You know what I mean? They say crack and all that. Crack hit real strong in the 80s, but heroin been around since the 50s and 60s. Way back in, like you said, the $2 and the penny cap days. A lot of cats don't understand, when they see a cat still hanging on the corner after 30 years, and you say, wow, man, you still out here? What I mean? With the big hands and the big feet
Swollen hands with abscesses all over them.
Right.
All
so,
hunchback.
How is you still maintaining, man, out here on this corner? And I left here 30 years ago, That's because that heroin is way notorious than crack cocaine. Crack cocaine, you're running back and forth all night long up and down the street. But the heroin thing is, you sitting somewhere nodding half for the day while the crack man done went up and down the street 100 times.
Well, that's right. That's right.
Two different
highs. You're right.
Right. And that's what people fail to realize. Heroin, you need that every day you hit the flow, period. Crack, you'll roll all night long, then you'll take your ass, excuse me, my lane, but you'll take your ass somewhere and go lay down,
Okay.
But heroin, when you hit the flow, I need my due. Because if I ain't got my due, I'm sick, I'm going to the bathroom, I'm this, I'm that, and it's a misunderstanding all day long until I get that,
That's correct.
You dig? So on that note right there, we're going to take a break. We're going to go to a song. We're going to hit a commercial, and then I'm going to turn the mic over to the wife, and we're going to let her get involved. Be right back, people, with my man tonight. You dig? Yeah, yeah, this the Streets Don't Love You Back. We dedicate this to all the youths across America, all those who've been abandoned by their parents and loved ones. We let you know that God is good, always, even when no one else cares. He's there for you.
Oh, keep your head up. Oh, hey.
The streets don't love you back. I hear grinding and a life of crime. The streets don't love you back. Show me what rule, baby, I'll get mine. The streets don't love you back. Show me what way on this lonely road. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they call me home.
Streets will never love you.
This is Rob Boyd
checking in, letting you know the streets will never, ever love you back.
When I was abandoned by my father in this world, when I was abandoned by the man that I thought loved me, it took my whole life in another direction, my mind. How can you say that you love me in this world? Never did nothing for me or my mama or my sister in this world. How can you look at yourself and be proud of what you've done? Now I say to myself, as a little child, I went to the street world and I had to learn that it didn't love me back. Now I look at life so much in a different frame, my mind. Now I know the streets will never love me back. I thank God for what he done for me, 'cause I listened to my mama in this world. Now I tell all the children, all the little boys and girls, the streets will never love you, will never love you back.
The streets don't love you back. I hear crying and I'm like to cry. The streets don't love you back.
I
know
I'm
gonna change the way your young mind thinks, and I know you wanna lounge, smoke weed and drink, and I really ain't all the type to give a speech or preach, but I promise God that I would do this if he get me out the street. See, when I was coming up, motherfuckers was loyal, but now they cracking under pressure when the situation boils and comes to a head, another fork in the road. Everyone got affidavits, show their codies told. They wasn't scared to do the crime, but now these motherfuckers cowards. The county was one thing, but now it's no more private showers. It's all in the open. Better learn to be a man, fuck all the pistol popping, yapping. Should've learned to use your hands. Went from pods, dorms, to day rooms, to mess halls and rec yards. You think you something special, everybody's got it hard. Penitentiary ain't like it is on TV. And a fair joint is something hope you never have to see. I don't care how tough you think you are to humble your ass. They got a room especially for you just to beat your ass. Shit sad, it's hard, raised by the streets with no dad. But going life with death and pressure ain't gonna never change the past. Cause yeah, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I like to dedicate this track to my mother, my brothers, my sister, to my man LD, his wife Holly, to my manager Lucinda, to my two sons, Michael and Robert. Dedicate this to my homeboys, the Bishop Crew off Van Eyck and Harper, the Brewster Project, my man Chickaria, Warner Kind of Project, 430 Crew, Day and Fab, rest in peace. Let's do this. You live on through my vision. The streets don't love you back. One of your own made it. Now we tell the world, the streets will never love you back. Change your ways. Change your ways.
The money. The rise to power, violence, gangs, drugs, death, self-destruction, prison. The true life story of Detroit kingpin Rob Boyd, a must-read book. This book will be available online, worldwide, to order at thestreetsdontloveyouback.name.com, at amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, indiebound.org, and borders.com. Also available in Detroit at Harlem World Books and Videos and at He-Man Bookstore on Frederick Douglass Boulevard. It's everywhere, so So go ahead and order your autographed copy today. The streets don't love you back.
Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome right back here to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. And I'm going to pass the mic over to the missus and let her do what she do.
Before I ask any more questions, we have a caller on the line, and I just want to make sure, you know, they might just be listening, but we're going to give them the opportunity to see if they have any questions for anyone. So let's get that call and see.
And I'm going to pass
the mic over to the missus and let her do what she does. Hello, caller. You're on the Streets Don't Love You Back show.
We have a caller on the line, and I just want to make sure that you might be
doing. Would you like to ask the question, caller, or are you just listening?
Well, I'm actually doing both. I was just listening to Gumin Sindel's story. I've sort of have been involved with Gumin Sindel. I live in New York.
Okay.
Emmett, my brother, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, it's sounding good there, Emma. Really, I think people are really getting the feel of, you know, what's going on, what you've been going through and telling your story, so.
Well, that sounds great, Dan. So you've been a part of the situation, Dan, so that's great, Dan, you know?
Yeah, oh, let me just say that one big thing that really attracted me to what Gumin Sindel and his involvement in gangs and drugs and his story is the story of so many people that people relate to the books. And I'm very involved in helping young people and our youth and their struggles. I grew up in Brooklyn and under sort of the same conditions, the same life. I remember that life with friends of mine, family, and so forth, so I can really relate to that and realize that, you know, the book actually has a real benefit in helping young people, teaching them how to survive because he survived. And, you know, in a way, when they understand that he did it, you know, they can do it also. So it's really been wonderful teaming up with him and figuring out how we can help other young people survive by using what's in the book.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's a great feeling when you can give back from experience and show others that you really don't have to go through the fiery furnace if you don't have to, you know, because everybody that might go through the fiery furnace might not come out on the other end quite well, you know. So it's just a true lesson learned out here in life, and we must continue to educate the youths and adults as well, you know, because we still got a lot of adults out here that's still lost in the game, still thinking the streets love them back. So we definitely have to continue educating both sides of the coin.
Yeah, what's amazing about the book as well, Mr. Bottle, is that the book, my intention was to target the younger men and women out there in the drugs, the gangs, and the violence.
Yeah.
But I've also noticed that I'm getting emails and responses from people around my age because there are other people that went through this life. And there were other people who were not victims, but they were the ones that were looking out the window.
Right.
And saw what was going on. So they lived it, and they were always curious, you know, what really happened out there. So the book kind of explains to them, oh, that's what these guys were doing out there. This is what was going on. I got one gentleman, of course, I won't mention his name, but he's a known professional fighter who emailed me and told me and confessed to me that he was involved in drugs, and you know, I would have guessed that this gentleman would have done that, but he did that, and we've been speaking ever since. You know, and I had a mother talking to me about her son who was killed, and she has a younger son now that looks like he's following the same path. He's only 12, so. We're chatting, and you know, and I'm telling them my experiences, and my experiences are helping. I had this young lady who just recently broke up with her husband because he was an alcoholic. He was beating her and stuff. And she found refuge in my book. And she says the book is my best friend. So, you know, it's getting more, it's getting everyone involved because it's a story that we all lived. Either we were victims of it or we saw it.
Exactly.
So we all can share it, you know. So, you know, it's just a matter of who cares.
The bottom line.
Who cares?
That is the bottom line. Who cares
right.
enough to make a change?
Exactly. With Emmett Thrower, who just on the phone, we formed the Youth Survival Project, which is going to be taking off. We have some celebrity support as well. And with that, we'll be doing something similar to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be going to the inner cities, especially out in New York and the East Coast here,
right.
and talking to the kids, and hopefully have that book be as mandated to these kids. They have to read it through courts.
Right, exactly.
You know, that the courts would say, you have to read this book, you know, in order to get through. So we're making progress with youth homes and prisons. By doing so. So, you know, that's something that came out from the book. So I'm just happy that it has touched a lot of people, you know.
Right.
And that's the thing. Now, to me, it's very important because, as you know, if you've read the whole book, I have a couple of years to live. You know, I have an illness that will take my life
mm-hmm.
in a couple of years, if not sooner.
Right.
And it's the direct result of those drugs.
Right.
So I have a mission. You know, the book to me is not just a book of sharing my experience. My experience, my wisdom, it's my honest truth
mm-hmm.
and how I did it. So you won't have to go through it.
Right.
That's the mission there. And
exactly.
this is why we must reach these young men and women, you know, and it's doing it, and it's all through the grace of God.
Amen.
Because if it wasn't through God, and if it wasn't for that little spark of light that I had inside me, that I knew that I was not ever to give up, you know, that I said, you know, I can't. I have to stay alive. I have to fight. I was spiritually dead. I was emotionally dead. The only thing that was doing that was keeping me alive was I had a heartbeat, but I was dead. I mean, I didn't care about nothing. I was an angry young Puerto Rican that will take your head off in a second. But I had that spark of light that I knew that if with continual prayer and doing the right thing, that light can develop to something bigger, and it did. And that's
right.
what saved me. So it was the power of God. And I'm glad that it's, people are picking up on this.
Well, I'm definitely glad of that, too, you know. And I definitely want to ask you what advice, you know what I mean, would you tell these young children, you know, while you're on the line? You know, what advice would you give the young men and women out here about these streets with the drugs, the gangs, and the violence?
Well, you know, most of these kids today, they swear. They are so cool. If they are involved in this kind of stuff. And today, a culture has developed where, well, I've been in prison 6 times. Well, I've been 4 times. Well, I'm better than you because I went 6 times. You know, that kind of attitude. You know, they're looking for the wrong things. These things are going to get them killed. These things are going to get them dead. Simple as that. My advice to them is learn to say no, man. I mean, just move on. You know, you don't have to. It's guaranteed. Life of destruction if you get involved in drugs, gangs, and guns. It's guaranteed. You understand? You are a survivor, my brother. I'm a survivor.
Amen.
I'm the only survivor from my block of 156th Street.
Right.
Not one of my boys are alive today. Not one. And
okay.
I think about that often. I, you know, I have a mission I have to complete. You know, there was a purpose for me being the only survivor. So if they think that it's all cool now, your brother is going to catch up on you. He's going to bite you in the ass.
Oh,
no doubt.
You know, Well, you know the old saying in God's word. You know it's a whole lot that's called. You feel me? But it's only a few that's chosen. You know. So he picks his chosen ones, no matter what we went through, and he put us on that mission to do what he need us to do. You know, and that's the same way I feel. You know, because a lot of my homeboys doing natural life in the penitentiary. And a lot of them dead who I ran with, so I can definitely feel all of that, you know. And my right-hand man been down 18 years, you know, and plus I lost my son to the streets. He been in prison since he was 15 now, you know, and he was 17 years old when he caught that case, and he been down 15 years, you know. He's 31 now. He'd be 32 in August, so I feel all that pain, you know, and every day I wake up, you know, I had to live with my oldest boy being down all them years. So he didn't know what it was to be a regular kid. You know what I mean? He's done spent all his life and adult life in the penitentiary. So my whole mission is when he do step down in 2 years, he's been under 17 years total, that, you know, I got something for him when he stepped down. I got a plateau for him to stand on with the Streets Don't Love You Back movement, because his message is going to be very powerful to the young cat and the young women out here that's, like you said, that's thinking it's cool to go back and forth to the joint 6-7 times, you know, and all of that. You know, I got to get beat half to death or to be in your crew. You know, it wasn't like that when we was coming up. So these kids nowadays, their morals is all twisted, you know, and their whole mentality is way out on earth somewhere, you know. So, yeah, we definitely got to keep the mission going on that God done revealed and put up on our mind as our hearts to do, you know. So I, you know, commend you on that, you know, all the way, you know.
Well, and that's likewise, brother, because you're doing a fine job, too. And I've been following everything you do. I read your emails, I see your blogs, and I see all the efforts that you have been doing. And I know you have saved a lot of lives, you know, and together, you know, our wisdom, you know, and our love, we'll do it. We will save some lives out there, you know.
Ain't
no matter how much time
no.
we have.
Right.
Now, I'd like to let people know where they can get the book at. It will soon be in Amazon because we're going through Baker & Taylor because it was self-published. It will be in Amazon Borders. But right now they can go to www.yoltbooks.com. That's Y-O-L-T books, BOOKS.com, and they can purchase the book there.
Great. Is it a contact number they can call if anyone would like to book you for any speakings?
Yes, 215-203-6301. Or they can go to the website and actually go to booking on the email there, and they can send us an email, and
sounds
it goes to Rick, and we'll respond immediately.
Sounds great.
And
yeah.
So the mission continues. You know, it doesn't stop, brother. Like, you know, like you said, someone chosen. You know, we had to live this life, because if we didn't, we won't be here right now, being able to spread that word.
No doubt.
So. And I understood that because I remember the first life I saved, and it was a girl who was drowning. And after I saw death, one girl drowned, I went and I saved another girl that looked just like her. And when I pulled her out of the water, it reminded me of that first girl that drowned. She looked just like her. You know, and then I was also given an opportunity by God to save another life of a man who was going to fall into a train track. And I just reached out my hand and pulled him out. And there was a few lives that I have saved, but you know what? I couldn't save my own.
Right.
I couldn't save my own. And I was dying each day. And it wasn't two. I actually said to God, I need you. I need you. And He came. So, you know, it's the power of God, and people's got to understand that. You know, today religion, it's like a second choice. You know, I'm not an organized religion type of guy. You know what I mean? I have a personal relationship with God.
Bottom line.
That's how I have it. You know, right. I don't go, you know, I've seen organized religion. I don't go for that. But ever since I had that personal relationship with God, is when my life have changed. But he's given me missions, and I do it. And you know, like I said, I don't have much time left on the planet. And what's the best thing I can do in the time that I have left? You know,
to give back to him and people.
Yeah, exactly, because it's not yours until you give it away, brother.
That's real talk. Real talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. So yeah, you know, I want you to tell them one more time where to get that book from again.
Yes, it's www.yoltbooks.com, which is YOLT books plural .com, and to contact us for booking for any other reason, 215-203-6301.
And give them the title of the book, sir.
Yes, the title of the book is You Only Live Twice.
My man, you heard that, people. You only live twice. And to know what that means, you have to go pick that book up, you know. So we encourage everybody to go pick that book up and get into your reading manual and get to learning what's really going on out here. And you don't have to go through the fiery furnace, as we call it, you know. And for parents, please go get involved as well, because a lot of you parents out here like to turn a blind eye to what's really happening to the children out here in these streets, you know. So we must get involved, to the saying, bring me a dime bag of weed home when you come off the block, you know. We must stop all that, you know, because you got so many parents now that had kids in the 80s, and you just waiting on your son or daughter to come over, you can get high with them, you know. So we must break that whole yoke and circle out here, you know, because a lot of that's going on in America now, you know. That's why a lot of kids
ain't
of kids ain't on the right track out here, because it ain't like when we was coming up. We couldn't dare go in the house talking about you finna get cool with your mama. You be,
hell,
you
the neighbor would have kicked your butt.
The
neighbor kicked your butt at that time. The neighbor would have grabbed you by the ear, kicked your butt, take it to your parents. Your parents kicked your butt. Then went to your father, gets home, he kicked your butt.
And you get another one. But nowadays, the parents
waiting
on you to come home and saying, don't forget to bring the wine home when you come off the block down there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we must break that cycle, man, because there's too much of that going on in the hood, you know? So let's get our head on right, man, and let's do the right thing out here. And once again, parents, let's learn that the streets don't love your kids back and don't love you back either, you know? And
well, parents need to be parents and not friends, because they're not your friend. They're your parents, and they need to act like it. And, you know, a lot of times nowadays, they want to be their kid's friend instead. And, you know, it's just not, it doesn't make things healthy.
No, that gets the game all the way twisted.
That is so true. That is so true. Listen to that, because
your kids ain't going to respect you at all. If you're sitting there getting high with your kids ain't going to respect your ass at all. You know what I mean? Bottom line. So don't be talking about little Johnny, you need to do this and all that. Little Johnny ain't paying you no attention, period. You know? He just saying, well, you just waiting for me to get home for you and get high anyway. So go sit down somewhere. That's how these kids talk to their parents nowadays, you know? We couldn't even talk to our parents like that.
No way.
You know, they telling you to go sit down somewhere.
Right. Well, we're alive today because we didn't speak to our parents that way.
Right.
There was no, listen, in my house, we had lamps, and they had no cords. You know why?
Right.
Because my father couldn't find no bell. All right, he had a pocket knife. He says, damn, man, he goes up to the lamp and cuts that cord and whip the crap out of us with that cord. I mean, whatever he found. Then he's going to the bed, then goes the broomstick. Discipline, it's important.
Yes,
we cannot give in to our kids. We cannot say, oh, well, we can't beat them, we join them. No, because you're doing them harm.
Right.
What you do instead, get a copy of You Only Live Twice and put it on their bed and let them read that. That's the best thing you can do for them.
Right. And then they understand.
But sitting down and smoking weed with them and whatnot, you're just encouraging it.
That's
right.
All. Now, what you was going to say, wifey?
Well, we had a couple callers, but I'm having a little bit of trouble with my switchboard here, so see if I can get it back. But in the meantime, can you just let us know how you're boxing? And I think you kind of joined the Boy Scouts and got off the streets a little bit, but how did your boxing help you to change?
Well, boxing, there was a PAL. PAL is probably one of the best organizations, best agencies that ever lived. It really is. The police at Athletic League, they used to have them like one in every, maybe three or four in the city. And we used to have one right in the corner of 156th Street in Fox, which they call at that time Little Vietnam. And right up the block, there was a PAL. I used to shoot drugs right behind the PAL. And I used to see these kids coming out, in and out, in and out. And one day I was invited by one of the cops to go inside there and to play some pool and, you know, and tennis and stuff like that. Not tennis, ping pong. So we went inside, started playing some pool, and then I started smelling the gym, and I said, you know what, that smells a little better to me than ping pong balls. So I started getting into the gym there. Next thing you know, I'm putting on gloves, and I'm liking it. And I was good at it. I was good at it. That was the natural. So I began to hang out more at the PALs than I was in the streets because I found something. I had something. There was something that made me feel good other than heroin.
Right.
And it was the boxing. And I stood there, and I knew that if I wanted to continue boxing, I had to stop drugs. So I gradually started to stop, and then one day I said, you know what, I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I remember, wow, probably my third or fourth day, and you, I don't know if, brother, I don't know if you ever shot up, but
used drugs, period, in my life.
Okay. Well, you know, three or four days is not enough. So when you know, you still got the runs, your runny nose, or you're throwing up, you're getting these chills. With that, I still was in the gym working out. You know, I mean, I could have died. Mm-hmm. And but I kept doing that. I never really went professional. I just went from gym to gym just to keep my way off the street. And that's where I landed up in 125th Street, Apollo Boxing Club, where I met the great Alex, the Bronx Bomber, Ramos.
Mm-hmm.
And who became welterweight champion. And I loved the way he trained, his discipline. I mean, the man was just like serious stuff, man. You know, he was not, when he was working out, leave him alone. That's all he ever did. And I
concentrate,
you know,
real heavy.
Oh yeah, I wanted to be like this guy. So one time I talked to his trainer. His name was Camacho. And I said, man, you know what? I want to get in the ring with Camacho. And he laughed. I want to get in the ring with Alex. And Camacho laughed. He said, you crazy, man. He'll kill you. I said, okay, but at least I learned something, right? So he said, okay, you know, watch it. Put on some gloves with me. I got in the ring with Alex Ramos.
Right.
And he gave me, but he was soft on me, but he gave me some good right shots that put me down a little bit. But
right.
Taught me how to keep my hands up.
Definitely.
He taught me how to keep my hands up. But I had a lot of respect for this man. And I did, you know, after I left from the Apollo Boxing Club and went to the Gleason and went to different clubs, I knew that I would meet Alex again in my life. And 30 years later, I looked up Alex Ramos and found him. I took a trip out to California, and there goes my brother.
There it is.
There. And we remember each other, and we hugged, and then he made me the representative for the Retired Boxers Foundation, and that's what I do now. I'm a representative, volunteer representative for the Retired Boxers Foundation, and we help retired fighters, professional fighters who have fallen from grace,
right.
You know, who also get back into that drug bit, because a lot of
right.
these guys that get into boxing, they do that to get away from the streets.
Right.
But boxing is a very cruel and corrupt sport.
Oh, damn.
And after they use them up, they spit them out, and guess where these guys land up at?
On the
right
street.
Back in those streets. And
right.
So we reach out to them and we help them. Right now, I'm the agent for Mildred Taylor, the 2-time world champion.
My man.
Who just came
and we got a couple of callers for you, too. We're going to go to Eric Cole 601.
I'm having trouble with my switchboard. I can't do it right now.
Okay. You having trouble with it?
I lost my connection to the switchboard for some reason.
Okay, then. Yeah, just listen.
I apologize for that. If anybody had any questions.
You can give me your website again.
Yeah, so the website is yoltbooks.com, which is yoltbooks.com. You can read, we have a teaser video up there as well that shows a little bit about my life, and it tells, we have reviews there. I have a great review from a movie star, Gary Stretch, the guy who made the movie Alexander and hundreds of other movies. Right now he's in the UK making the movie The Heavy, and he read the book, and he said it was the best book he has ever written. So we're waiting on Freda Foreman, George Foreman's daughter, to give me that review. I just sent her the book, and I'm waiting for her and a few others. But we've been getting some great reviews on the book. But the main thing is the people who are reading it and what they tell me they're doing with the books.
Right, you know, and lives that you're touching.
Giving
with,
it to the kids.
The yes.
They're giving it to their kids, brother.
That's
and the kids
happening.
Are reading them, and the kids are going in and questioning their mother. You know, and I mean, it's so good. It's so good.
We need
it,
that in the households, period. You know, we need kids asking more questions and want to know about this and know about that instead of want to run outside and join a gang or want to run outside and try drugs, you know. We need them asking the parents more things and the parents asking the kids more things, you know, because sometimes you let your kids go astray outside playing and you don't care what little Johnny doing. Little Johnny could be doing everything up under the sun, but you don't ask him no questions or her no questions when they come in. The first thing you ask them is what a weed at, or did you bring me something home? that's the topic nowadays of the young era now.
Yeah, what you got me?
Right, right. Yeah. It ain't about how was your day or did you get in any trouble or what went down. It's all about what you bring me home. Did you bring mama a drink or you bring mama some reefer home or crack or whatever, you know? So we got to definitely get that in tune out here in these streets and continues letting the parents know. Get involved with your kids. Know what your kids is doing. Stop trying to be the friend and be the parent, you know what I mean? And enlighten your children that it's a better way than being out here in the street trying to be a thug or a drug dealer, because the feds, the DEA, and the police, and the jack boys, and the robbery boys, they can take all that away, and that's your life, you know? And
okay.
Once you're dead, you don't got a chance.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But when you get education, can't nobody take that away from you, you know what I mean? That's yours for life, you know?
Okay.
So we must encourage more education, and these youths out here getting more involved with a lot of different programs out here as well. And just being enlightening, that's a better way out here than these streets. Cause the streets
instead
are
of saying, instead of saying, oh, not my kid, my kid won't do that, you know, look at it. You know,
and that's another thing I get tired of parents saying, what your kid won't do. You don't know what little Johnny doing when he shut that door and leave out that house, you know, because you ain't even questioning little Johnny. You just saying, oh, he won't do this and he don't do that. Next thing you know, you ain't got to call little Johnny in jail for murder. I guess you didn't thought little Johnny would rob somebody up the street. You know what I mean?
And they're still in denial.
Right.
And they're still being denial.
Oh, he did not do that. No, he did not do that. He couldn't have. Oh, okay. Why couldn't he? You know, he human like everybody else. You know, you didn't pay
him.
Well,
you encouraged it. Well, what do you expect?
Right. You sitting up here asking him, hey, when you come off the block, don't forget to bring that weed or that pack home or that drink home to mama, you know. But you ain't said nothing about go to school.
Right.
We've got
about a minute and a half left.
All right. So any shout-outs you would like to give my man?
Well, I'd like to give a shout-out to all my fans. I really appreciate all these people that have supported me with this book. Emmett Thrower, who has been with me from day one, he read some excerpts from the book and he says, you know what, you got something here, and we got to meet. And we met. He came out to Philly. We filmed some stuff, considering a screenplay out of the book. And we started a very good relationship here, and we started the Youth Survivor Project. So Emmett Thrower right now is my right hand man, and all these people are Chris Gallagher, who writes to me constantly, and we share with each other our pains and our glories, you know, and Gary Stretch, who's there and always got encouraging words. and all these fans in, and these mothers, you know, who write to me and ask me, you know, what can I do? You know, all I can tell you is what we just spoke about. You know, be strong. You know, don't encourage it. You know, discourage it. You know, and don't say not my kid. You know, I remember when I was when my son was in school and the teacher used to come up and say my son did this and did that. I said, yep, he did it. And my wife used to say, nah, he won't do that. I said, he did it. I know he did. I know
oh,
he
man.
Did. To show you enough, he did it. You know what I mean? So, you know, I can read my kids very well. So I raised them pretty tough, you know.
Right.
But I made them tough. My girls are tough. You know.
Right.
And I made them tough because I had to have that strong discipline because of that fear I had of them going into what I've been through. But unfortunately, I myself have a son who's in jail who did not listen. And did the drug scene, and he's in there now. And I'm pretty
right.
sure he's learned his lesson now. You know, it's not a real big thing, but he's going to be there a little bit.
Ain't no doubt.
You know, but you know, I totally dedicate this book to him, in
man.
Hopes that when he does come out, that he can read this book and see what his father you know worked so hard for. You know.
Oh man.
But life continues. Life endures. You know, and you know it would. You leave your child behind, you know, you got to make sure that you're leaving something that you instilled in him, you know, so.
And that's for real, you know. So with that being said, any last announcements before we close out the show, huh?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I'm good.
Okay. I just wanted to apologize to any of the callers that had questions. I was having, still having technical difficulties with my switchboard. But if you have any questions for Gumercindo, you can give him a call at 215-203-6301, or you can visit his website or get his book, I should say, at www.yoltbooks.com. And
they can email me from there as well if they want to. Go to the website and email me.
Okay.
And I will respond to that as well.
And you can also email us at thestreetsdontloveyouback@gmail.com. And please visit us and join us on our website, and that's thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. And join our movement to help educate the youth and everybody that the streets don't love you back, and you know, violence and gangs and drugs and killing, you know, it's enough. It's enough of the violence. We need to stop that, and we need to change things. And we need to give hope and belonging to the young kids so that they don't get into that kind of a lifestyle.
Amen.
So, you know, that's all I have to say. You know, the streets don't love you back, and we, you know, we just need to all work together to change things.
And that's a heck of a title, brother.
I appreciate it, man.
That is such a heck of a title, you know, because as I was writing my book, you know, I was putting how much of the hate and how much of you give to the street and how much you have sacrificed and how much you go through.
Yeah,
and you never got love back from the ghetto.
Never.
You know, and you never got back from it. And so when you wrote that title, when I saw that title, I said, you know what, that's a perfect title, man. The streets don't love you back.
Right,
so occasionally you're going to hear me say that,
all right? Oh, it's all good, man, because, you know, like I say, God gave me that title because, you know, I listened to your story, and, you know, I started in the streets at 10 years old. You know, I started running in the gangs, and I joined one of the most notorious gangs in the city of Detroit at that time, you know. So I gangbanged from 73 to 1980, and I seen my stepfather murdered right in front of me and my mother, you know, when I was 9 years old, you know. So my life took off in a whole different direction in the game, you know. But one thing I never got involved with, I never used drugs or smoked cigarettes or drank or none of that, you know. I was angry on a lot of elder levels in life, you know. And my thing was getting money, you know. And people get time, go get that book, The Streets Don't Love You Back book. That's my book. And like my wife said, log on to our website, thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. You'll see a lot of information about gangs, drugs, violence. You'll see a lot of resources we have for children and adults that need any kind of help or any kind of talking to. You know, all the resources is there on our movement page. And let's just get involved, everybody, because it takes everybody to get involved to make a change in this world, you know. And we definitely need to make a change within our youth and within ourselves, you know, when we're trying to give back. So on that note, you know, I'll just say to everybody, I appreciate everybody listening in tonight. I appreciate our guest tonight. And don't forget, get his book as well, You Only Live Twice. And on that note, we're going to say, hey, the streets don't love you back. And good night to everybody. And may God bless.
God bless.
Good night.
Good night.